It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Good evening and welcome back to your Contemporary Dons podcast, as I was told our podcast was on Friday night at the Champions of Dinner event at Teka, which was a fantastic night. Joining me live on Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel is our usual stand-in co-host, because Callum has been drafted in to work at Tesco, so sadly he cannot come and rant about referees and frustrating draw, I think, is the word we're going to use, Phil, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a sore one to take, but I'm happy to be in using my usual pappy 75th minute sub in for Callum, but we're all right.
Yeah, I know this is a run the ball into the corner, a bit of time wasting, and we bring you on. But we speak about using the squad, and I guess that's what we do here on Red Tinted Glasses whenever Callum can't fill in as normal, and it's between you or Johnny as the stand-in. But Aberdeen, we speak about using the squad from an Aberdeen point of view, given the kind of run of games that we've got coming up just now. And it's three changes that we made to the starting lineup from that 6-0 defeat to Celtic. Esther Sokler, Ryan Duncan and Jamie McGrath coming into the starting lineup. I think both the inclusion of Esther and Ryan more so was seen as a surprise. Do you think the lineup that we saw on Sunday maybe has any sort of indication towards the League Cup final, or do you think that is just us trying to give the likes of Esther some minutes?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I would like to think we're not going to be playing Ryan Duncan left back in the cup final. I don't think my men's mental health could take that. but no, I think it was definitely sort of an eye at the final with the sort of midfield we're going to go with. If we're going with a three and a four, you know, and that conversely means whether we're going with one or two up top. And I think sort of putting Sokler in over Duke was maybe a nod to that. Obviously brings something a little bit different to the team, and I thought he brought something pretty good. I was actually quite impressed with him, because I mean, I've only really seen his cameos that he has had, much as the same as everybody else.
Yeah, and I think for me, certainly on the opening 45, which we'll go into in a bit more depth, Esther really kind of impressed me, and probably chomping at the bit to get that first league start and really put himself about. I really think that Liam Balogun and Connor Goldson did not enjoy that physical presence. And I remember saying at halftime to my friend Keith that we just needed a couple of Balkan bastards up top that don't give a fuck about Scottish football and upsetting, you know, the likes of Rangers and Celtic and putting themselves about. And that's what Bojan and Esther did in that first half, and kind of really annoyed the Rangers backline and the Rangers midfield. And we were really rattling Rangers at that point, and probably the frustration at halftime was that we were only 1-0 up.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really surprised me with Sokler was he was deceptively quick. You know, I don't think we've really seen much opportunities to see him run the channel all that much. And he was, I mean, for the majority of the first half, he turned Balogun or Goldson every single time he had his back to them, and he was quick enough to get away from them. But yeah, like you say, I think if he just picks a corner with that first chance he's got, you know, we're looking at 2-0 at halftime. And I don't think it's much fault on his own. I mean, he's not had very much game time. He's probably gone one-on-one and absolutely bricked it at the fact that he's one-on-one this early on and he's got an opportunity. But yeah, a bit frustrating that he didn't take it. But yeah, no, our two mad lads up top did as well.
And that chance, I, you know, at the time, I was disappointed, but I personally thought it was a really good save, more because from the red shed, it looked like Jack Butland had to kind of lifted his leg to save the shot. It wasn't kind of as we've seen previously with some of the one-on-one attempts we've had this season when we fluffed our lines that, you know, he could have been better in terms of picking a corner. I just think that Jack Butland got a bit fortunate on that one. And you thought, oh, please don't let this come back to haunt us, which I guess in a way it kind of did. But, you know, even in the early stages of the game, Ruby could have put us 1-0 up inside, probably was the opening couple of minutes, a good header. I mean, probably does everything that we expect without heading it downwards and putting it on target as well. But there was, for me, I guess the word that was kept being asked of the Aberdeen camp, and we were asking this on the show in terms of the previews, what reaction would we get and what kind of intensity would we set for this game? And I certainly think in that first 45, in terms of the press, we got that reaction. And we looked to cause Rangers plenty of problems by getting in their face. I remember comparing that first 45 to how we played against Pauk in terms of committing niggly fouls, upsetting the run of play, but also being able, when we were in possession, to cause Rangers problems on with our style of play being the counter-attack. And Rangers really looked lost for large periods of that first half.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, Taverniers came out and said it himself in, you know, years gone by, that he always gets flack for is the fact that he's openly said Rangers don't like it when teams get in their face. And it's something that we've never done enough of in the past. And I feel like we're getting a bit better at it now. We just need to try and sustain it for longer periods. But I mean, that first half, Rangers really weren't causing much issue. And I think that's, you know, the frustrating thing as the game went on is the first half, they just didn't really create. There was no one really there that was looking like they were going to cause too much issue. And I think we really just handled it well, like you're saying. I mean, we had the opportunity to sort of catch them on the break. Our press was good. It was organised, but it was, you know, it was consistent as well. And I think, like I said, I think if we were just able to sustain it for longer periods over a game, it would suit us better.
What do you make, because you mentioned there about sustaining the press longer over the course of the game. Barry Robson came out after the game and said, you know, the players tired in the second half, down to the fact that we pressed so much in the first half and that it's not possible for us to maintain a high press throughout the game, which Willie Miller was very dismissive of. Him and Richard Gordon were surprisingly critical of Aberdeen, I thought, in the post-match analysis, especially for two Aberdeen fans. I don't know whether they're just suiting their employers or making sure that most of the West Coast listeners were pleased by the level of fairness maybe being come out. But Willie Miller was definitely critical that in terms of saying that's a really poor excuse. He doesn't buy that because we've got players that should be able to press for large periods of the game. Would that be something you agree with, that we could maybe have done a better job? I think it's obviously certainly by the way you're saying you feel we could maybe do a better job of pressing for larger parts, but instead of, because Willie Miller said he basically felt that for the second half we just sat on our laurels and tried to defend that 1-0 lead.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be inclined to somewhat agree with that. I mean, the second half we did just sit in and invite the pressure on, which is, you know, always going to come back and sort of cause you an issue at some point. You know, it's going to allow them to come into the game. I think we could do better in the press. I mean, we've got the pieces there. At the end of the day, a professional athlete should be able to run yourself a bit, you know, close to failure a bit as well. We're still running five subs and we've got players that we can bring on to sort of supplement the press. But I think what Barry does well, and again, it's one of those things I just like to see a bit more of, he's good at sort of structuring timings for press. You know, we're good at sort of taking a 20-minute period where we go, right, we're going to take 20 minutes to sit in. And tactically, and I guess psychologically as well, it makes them come out more so that when we do press, we're going to win it in better areas. And with them, we're out of position. So I would just like to see us sort of, instead of doing 45 minutes hard press, 45 minutes sit and soak up pressure, you know, if he structures it more in a sort of 20-20-20 or however he wants to do it, just to give us it over the 90. Because, you know, like I've just said, the sitting in for the whole second half really does just invite trouble, especially at 1-0. You know, it's not a secure enough lead.
Yeah, there was always that kind of sense of something was coming, especially the more they hit the crossbar in that second half. But even then, to be honest, there was, you know, very little in the way of clear-cut opportunities for Rangers. You know, going back to that first half, Cantwell flashed a shot across the face of the goal is the only real kind of opportunity I remember. I know Kel Roos had to make a couple of good saves, one from, I think it was a corner, where he kind of spreads his body well, and then the second save is straight at him, and he palms a shot out, thankfully, towards our defence instead of going kind of palming it out to the side of the post where Todd Cantwell would have been. My only kind of real nervousness around Kel Roos yesterday was when he came for a ball in the first half and he punched it rather than collect it. And I think even Bojan, I remember seeing Bojan because the play stopped and he shouts, fucking catch it. So, you know, even Bojan's getting frustrated sometimes at the punching. But I know a lot of you were kind of picking up on the fact of how critical I was of Kel Roos in the previous episode. I think, you know, he was back to probably one of his better performances yesterday with a lot of his shot stopping. That was a really good performance. It was just, he couldn't do anything with it, the penalty.
Yeah, no, I thought Cal played well yesterday. What good saves. I was a little bit nervy with the time it would sometimes take him to get the ball out of his feet. You know, the boy Danilo was a bit quicker than I remember, and he almost got on the end of a few of them. But as well as distribution, I thought, was so much better. You know, previous games, I think a few times I've been on here, I've been quite critical of the fact that his distribution's been mince for majority of the season. So it was actually quite good to see him actually playing the ball relatively accurately and actually allowing us to retain a bit of possession.
Yeah, and of course his distribution was what led to the opening goal as well. Perfectly set up there for I'll link into it.
Set him up, you knock him down, Glenn.
Exactly. Carl never gives me these sorts of setups. It didn't look like the most convincing clearance, kind of a low little pitch into the green from a few yards out, because I know you like your golf references when you're on this podcast. And it was a beautiful little flick on for Bojan to run through. And unlike the game against Hakim when he was in a similar opportunity, he made no mistake and set the ball out wide of the post to curl in to the bottom corner. And no more for me at that stage than we deserved. And it was great to see us actually taking advantage of that period of being on top. And getting the goal.
Yeah, no, like you say, I mean, Sockler's flick on, I think I've not seen a lot of folk really mention it as much as they should have on Twitter after the game. It was everything you'd want from a striker in that scenario. I mean, the power he got on it as well as the accuracy just sort of cut the line was unbelievable. But no, in the finish as well, I was kind of a bit worried when I seen him taking it on almost first time. I was thinking, oh no, I can see this flashing way over, but no, Bojan's just a man on form just now. I mean, 11th goal in the league is an unbelievable return, you know. It's annoying in the same sense because I think the more he scores, the more we're going, yeah, he could be away maybe even in January at this rate, just by how well he's playing. But no, it is testament to how, you know, how he's put the team on his back for a lot of this season in terms of our sort of attacking side of things.
Yeah, especially given the kind of inconsistency of some of the results. And you mentioned that kind of the headed through ball from Esther Sokler. We're not even mentioned the quality of pass from Leighton Clarkson to Esther for his opportunity. But I guess that kind of link up between Esther and Bojan, it was only one example from yesterday, but the fact that they were both on that kind of same wavelength speaks volumes for the potential of the partnership that they could form for maybe a matter of weeks, as you say, with the fact that Bojan keeps scoring, especially in a game live on TV like yesterday, is going to only continue to attract interest. I thought, you know, there was a couple of times Leighton Clarkson tried to play passes to Esther, and there was maybe just that kind of they weren't quite there as him and Bojan tend to be. But again, that's only going to take time. And you know, a few people saying as well, like Paul Riki saying, you know, if Sokler had more minutes, he could have probably scored his chance. And again, you know, these guys get more minutes, more time to work together, we might see a bit more opportunity. But like I said, I think we kind of did well in that first half. I suppose the other big talking point from the first half a certain Mr. Todd Cantwell with one of the most extraordinary dives Pataudry's seen this season.
Oh, God. I mean, I don't get him as a person, as a player. I don't understand him. Because we were in relatively early to Pataudry, and obviously he was out warming up. And he's like the typical English player that comes to Scotland and just has like the world's biggest ego. You could just see it when he was warming up. And, you know, there's a bunch of kids giving him pellets from the South Stand, which is like, if I wasn't 24 years old, I'd be down there with you, but it's a little bit embarrassing if I do it. And just this whole demeanour. And then that dive was just... And how he wasn't booked for it as well is like the frustrating thing, because we've seen him at times that Duke's been booked for diving, has been chastised by official club accounts, by pundits, on the radio, on the TV. Cantwell does it most weeks, and it's just sort of like he's got a nice hairband and, you know, dances on TikTok, so, you know, we just
expect it. Yeah, and, you know, the witch hunt that's been made out against Rubizic for winning the ball against Kyogo, but nothing's going to be done. And, you know, whether you want to call it clever or cynical, the fact that he tries to, you know, flick his leg into Jamie McGrath when he's already, you know, halfway through his 360 tumble. I'm just surprised there wasn't some judges on this sideline to give him a score at the end of that. And the cheek he even had to, you know, appeal for a penalty, it is disgusting, let alone the fact that, probably more surprising, that Andrew Dallas didn't think of that was a perfect opportunity to jump in and bring Nick Walsh to the monitor at that opportunity as well. But I guess on VAR in that instance, annoying that they can't go back and book players for that sort of dive. But how Nick Walsh doesn't see that as simulation is beyond belief.
No, I mean, I did see, I don't know what referee it was, I didn't click on the link on Twitter, but I did see somebody asking for a retrospective red card on one of the articles, which, I mean, I'm going to sound very much like my dad in this sense, where I go, oh, Ken, like, I would just red card folk if they dive, I just send them off, they'll quickly learn. But it's one of those things, if they are so adamant to get rid of it from the game, you know, if you're a serial offender, you should just go, all right, one match ban, like, you know, until you cut it out. But it was like a HBK level sell from Todd Cantwell, pinging himself to the ground and then kicking on his way down. It was,
but, you know, there was, Seema was the same when he cut in from the South Stand as well. You know, there was that kind of real lack of ideas up front for Rangers. I think your point about Danilo earlier, I thought he looked really rapid up top. You know, there was a couple of times, you know, going back to Kyle Roos, when he took a maybe touch just to put it wide and Danilo was charging down. It was just a bit too close for my liking at times. But yeah, I thought they were pretty poor up top. And I have to say, certainly from that first 45, I don't know about you, Phil, but it's given me a lot of encouragement for a few weeks' time for the League Cup final, which probably is not something I want to have going into a cup final against Rangers, is hope. But, you know, the performances of the likes of Esther Sokler and the way we caused Rangers problems does give any Dons fan a bit of hope for that cup final now.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you look at yesterday, and especially if we play predominantly like we did in the first 45, you know, I don't think we should have anything really to worry about. Like, say, the only real bright spark, you would say, for Rangers in that first half was Danilo, which is, I guess, you know, and then the only other players that were maybe causing slight issue were like Cantwell and Seema. Yeah. And all, like, you know, that's why their subs made no sense either, because it was like their best players were coming off, in my opinion. But no, it's one of those things where you don't want to feel confident as a Dons fan going into any final. I mean, even if we were to be playing against like Stenhouse Mute or something, I still wouldn't like to be too overtly confident.
I still wouldn't be confident about 3-0 up in going into injury time.
No, exactly. So, but I mean, if you base it off yesterday, you know, the performances of both teams, if we play like, you know, we did and Rangers play like they did, you know, it could very easily be, you know, if we take our chances a lot more, could be a completely different game by half time, and you know, we could be looking at lifting the cup at the end of it.
Yeah, and you know, we spoke about the changes that Aberdeen made, obviously three, and Jamie McGrath coming over his hamstring scare to put in another excellent performance in the midfield. Ryan Duncan seems to be a bit of a curious case. I was laughing at a reply to our tweet about when I said it was Ryan Duncan's position tombola produced him at left wing back, and someone saying that these are players of a squad, not parts of a gearbox. And obviously someone that doesn't maybe listen to the show regularly to kind of catch on to that sort of joke. But I kind of felt sorry again for Ryan Duncan, because left wing back's maybe not his most suited position. I think there was a lot of times I was screaming at him to just get rid of the ball, and sometimes he was just a bit slow at doing that. And there was one moment in the first half where he had two opportunities, two separate occasions to clear the ball, and he failed to do so, which led to decent Rangers opportunities. Thankfully, their finishing was poor on both occasions. But I think at times I felt like he was almost their Rangers' most attacking threat by how cheaply he was giving the ball away.
Yeah, I mean, there was a reason they were going down the right-hand side. You know, I mean, I know they tend to be right-hand side dominant just with Tavernier being there, but there's a reason they were using it as often. Because it's no fault of his own, really.
No, absolutely.
It's you know, he's out of position. It's a case of they've probably looked and gone, oh, you're left footed and relatively large, you can go there. And you could see that positionally, because every single time he was either getting sucked out of position or he just didn't know where to put himself in terms of, you know, being left one on one on the left hand side if Jensen wasn't there to sort of guide him through it. And like you say, I mean, the couple of occasions that you just wanted him to boot it down the line, and he tried like a little turn, or he, you know, tried like a little intricate, you know, touch and go or whatever, and you just thought, please just boot it. And like I say, I mean, it's you know, it's difficult to say anyone played bad, you know, like everybody did pretty well. And to be fair, for the most part, he was all right. Like, he didn't have that much to do, really. But yeah, on the face of things, he was probably the weak link in our team on Sunday.
Yeah, and as you said, it's through no fault of his own. But the one positive, I guess, was obviously seeing the return to the pitch of Jimmy McGarry. No Jack McKenzie in the matchday squad at all. I'm not sure if there was kind of any information on why he wasn't involved. Not seen anything.
Did he limp off against Celtic? I can't even remember.
I'm not sure. As I said, I only watched the goals back from that game. But I've certainly not seen anything, and it wasn't certainly kind of disclosed by Steve Agnew in the pre-match press conference. He just said it was just Shaden that was out or kind of nearing coming back from what I remember of all of that. But, you know, we've kind of touched on the second half already in terms of the fact where we spent a lot of it camped in our own half, and Kaiser put in the comments earlier, it was on screen when we were kind of touching on this a bit, about Robson's negativity in the second half potentially costing us. One thing on that second half performance, I mean, it was all well and good sitting in, because for large parts we were pretty defensively resolute. I think if, you know, he's going to use the excuse about, you know, tiredness kind of creeping in, you mentioned it already, and so did Willie Miller, is we've got five subs to use. For me, the biggest thing in that second half was how Connor Barron didn't make an entrance into the team, because Graham Chenet looked to be having a particularly off day in midfield as the game went on. Were you surprised not to see Connor Barron introduced?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was quite surprised he didn't start, in fairness to him. I mean, the performances he's put in when he has played this season, he almost looks undroppable at times. Yeah. It's a complete turnaround, you know, how he's looked when he's been coming back from injury. But, you know, with him starting on the bench, I'm kind of shocked he didn't come in for Shinny. I mean, I'd seen quite a few tweets about Shinny this season, and I mean, on Sunday in general, just about how his performances aren't really up to scratch at times when it matters. And I think that the same as Rangers yesterday, I think with the way we set up with the three in the midfield of Shinny, Clarkson and McGrath, you've got two attacking creative midfielders. You're needing Shinny in there to be the bite and be the person that breaks things up. And I just feel like he just wasn't doing enough of that. And I also thought he was getting so far up the pitch at times that he was leaving someone like Clarkson on his own to try and soak up everything in the midfield. So I was surprised Barron didn't come in for him sort of on the sort of hour mark or so.
And I think what also didn't help our midfield in that second half was Jamie McGrath being put onto a booking. Mm-hmm. And I know you want to speak about that free kick and what happened from that as well. But in more in terms of the fact that he was kind of putting in a few challenges, and there was one incident as well, I think when the game was still at 1-0, where he went to make a challenge and quickly pulled out of it, probably knowing what would happen if he got it wrong. And it was that point where I thought, right, we need to make a change in midfield. And even if it was, you know, taking McGrath off for a Connor Barron, you could have put Leighton Clarkson into a more advanced role off the striker. We've seen him play in there before. So I have to say, I was surprised to see that the midfield three, you know, play out as long as it did without change. But on Graham Shinney as well, because the second half really didn't give us a lot of chances. It was really, as I said, well, it felt like one-way traffic. But when you get opportunities like we did in the second half, a three on two, I think it was, you need to be taking the best opportunity in, and Graham Shinney didn't do that. Through running at Connor Goldson, Esther Sokler to one side, Bojan Miowski to the right. Bojan's going to be the ball, given his form. But if Shinney just took a look to his left, Esther Sokler was 100% the better option.
Yeah, no, that was one that had me head in hands. If it was maybe Clarkson that was running through, maybe it would have been different in terms of, you know, he's used to being in that position and, you know, sort of having the vision to make the right ball. But yeah, it was just, it's another one of those, like I said earlier, if we're in the final and we're more clinical with our chances and our decision making, you know, it could be 2-3-4, you know, just with the way that Rangers do sort of set themselves up to have a high line and have their centre backs come out with the ball, it does create those counter attacking opportunities, which even if we are in a period where we're sitting in like we were yesterday, we're still going to present opportunities with the pace we've got going forward as well.
And I think that chance, though, also goes back to the point earlier about Sokler's lack of minutes and whether had he been kind of featuring more regularly, it might have been a ball that we saw play. But, you know, in the analysis that Sportscene did of it, I actually kind of never thought about this, is how quick Graham Shinney was in terms of getting rid of the ball. He didn't wait to commit Connor Goldson. So when he plays the pass to Bojan, which was actually a terrible pass in itself, which kind of stunted the momentum of the attack, it made Connor Goldson's job a bit easier to come over and get Bojan in a sense, because, well, Bojan also had to get the ball out of his feet, but it just totally ruined the attack. Whereas a ball through to Esther had Connor Goldson running the wrong way and Esther running through one-on-one with Jack Butland, and, you know, hopefully would have made amends for the earlier miss. But look, it's one of those things that hindsight's a wonderful thing, and it's if, buts, and maybes now.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like I say, if it was a different player than Shinney in that scenario, it could well have been different, you know. So it's not really what you can do with those.
No.
It's human error as well. You know, it's going to happen in games. But
yeah, it's that, like, mentality, say, the mental fatigue coming in, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, Shinney spent most of the game try to tell Nick Walsh how to do his job. You know, that was probably mentally taxing enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was one of those ones, just from, like, where my season ticket seat is, it was one of those where you're screaming, put it out left, and it goes the wrong way, and you just go, fuck's sake.
Yeah, but you can totally understand why he plays in Bojan. Oh,
100%,
Or attempts to, is maybe the better word. In terms of then defensively, as I said, you know, we felt very much under the cosh. Rangers hitting the bar on a couple of occasions, as Phil's Wi-Fi drops off. This is the joys of doing live broadcasting. Here he goes back again. So, as I said, you know, hitting the bar a couple of times. Kel Rose, I think, did he get a glove to Tom Lawrence's chance? I know you're obviously, but maybe
I think so.
Yeah,
I couldn't really tell because it was kind of a scuffed volley anyway.
Really dinked, floaty almost.
Yeah, it was a weird one. From where I was, it looked like Rhys got a hand to it, but it could have just smacked off the top of the bar, potentially.
Yeah, I think it does hit from Kel's fingertips onto the bar, but we've discussed kind of Nick Walsh and obviously the pressure building, and when the pressure is building in that game, you're doing all you can to relieve it. We give away a cheap free kick we mentioned on the Jamie McGrath booking. What doesn't help, Phil, is what you picked up when the free kick's awarded and then gets taken 10 yards further forward.
Yeah, it was a crazy one because, you know, I've got no qualms with the booking at all. He's cleaned him out. Fair play. I'd want anyone to clean him out in that scenario because it was going to be a good chance.
Yeah.
But from where he fouls him, Walsh then gives the free kick from where Cantwell slides up to, which is, you know, like maybe 25 yards out or so. Everyone's going mental. McGrath's going mental and try to push the ball over to where it was taken. Gets threatened with another booking. Nicky Devlin's going mental, gets threatened with another booking. Then after all that, he just lets the Rangers players effectively stand in the Don's wall, which I'm pretty sure was a rule that was changed about two seasons ago.
Yeah.
And again, Shinny's going, he can't stand there. And Walsh is going, shut up. And it makes no sense at all how you can be an SFA qualified referee and not have any knowledge of that, and how you can have two other SFA qualified referees on the line not go to you, by the way, that free kick's about 5 yards back. But heaven forbid Gartman walks 3 yards down the line during a throw-in, because he'll be told to walk backwards.
Yeah, I know Barisic had similar on the main stand side with trying to get a throw-in, and he was about 10 yards further forward as well. But I guess, you know, we did so well, and then right at the death, I mean, at the time I was absolutely raging, but as soon as the ball came into the box, I saw Goldson hit the deck, and I thought, oh, for fuck's sake, there's going to be a VAR check here. Like, I obviously hadn't seen, you know, what had happened, but you could see, I didn't know who it was at the time, but seeing on the replay now, it was Lammers, Goldson, both hands up straight away, claiming for a penalty. And I thought, well, for fuck's sake, any excuse to, in, you know, forensically investigate this will be taken. So, you know, the ball clears and eventually goes dead, and everyone's like, oh yes, just 5 more minutes. And then, nope, VAR check. What the fuck for? Fucks are a VAR check for? I was like, well, Connor Goldson threw himself to the floor, so that'll sure be getting looked at. Obviously, Nick Walsh gets called to the monitor. 2.5 minutes, Phil, for him to come to the decision that that is a penalty. Let's not forget, he does not award this on the pitch. Now, I know the ABZ guys brought up the same incident where Chris Kane was fouled in a game against Rangers at Perth, and they mentioned how Nick Walsh awarded it. Well, that's not true, because Nick Walsh didn't award that on field. It was VAR that looked at it and decided it wasn't a penalty. This time, VAR look at it and advise it's a penalty. Same VAR ref as the game. Unfortunately, the team involved in being on the receiving end of the foul, it is different, and the outcome is different. Kel, surprise? Not really to anybody else in Scottish football.
No, it's one of those ones where when the first thing for the VAR check, I had no idea what was going on, because I didn't even see Goldson hit the deck. I wasn't even paying attention to that. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm wondering if it's, you know, something that maybe someone snapped somebody's or putting a cross in, or, you know, maybe similar to Jack McKenzie where they're randomly just going to let them have a penalty for trying to block a shot or whatever. It's just, it makes no sense to me that VAR, which has been brought in for clear and obvious errors, can take 2.5 minutes, which to me means it's not clear and it's not obvious if it's taking you that long to come to a decision. Yeah. But as well, it comes back to the age-old inconsistency of it all. Like you've mentioned the Chris Kane one, Livy at the start of the season, Obelai basically strips Bojan's shirt off him, and I don't even think VAR looked at it, let alone, you know, the referee going, oh, that's maybe a penalty. I don't even think VAR looked to see whether it was worth checking for.
And even last season, when Anthony Stewart was had the shirt basically off one of the Motherwell defenders at Fir Park, no penalty there as well.
Yeah, and I think what's annoying as well is even in the game yesterday, and I think they'd flagged it on Sports Scene, was the elbow from Goldson. Now, it's not something that's going to change the game because it's in our box and it's on Polvara. But when you look at it, he slows down, looks Polvara right in the eyes and swings an elbow at him. Okay, he was booked on the field, but how it's not...
Was he booked? Was he?
Yeah, he was booked, but how he wasn't upped to violent conduct. Because, you know, if he's maybe swung an elbow during a header where he's not looking at him, fair enough. Like, I wouldn't want that to be given as a red. But to physically stop dead in your tracks, look someone in the eyes and elbow them, and for VAR just to go, yeah, sound, that's fine.
Yeah.
It'd take 2.5 minutes to scrutinise Gartman, who was also somewhat blocked by Lammers. He shouldn't have pulled the shirt. It was stupid.
Yeah.
It was daft. He shouldn't have done it. But at the same time, his run's blocked by Lammers. At the same time, it's one of those things where, you
I
know,
think
what
that,
do you call?
That, so the frustrating thing, obviously, as you said, it was clumsy from Gartman pulling the shirt in the first place, because any excuse at that desperation stage, it felt like they were going to jump on the back of to give Rangers something, especially after Celtic had dropped points. But as Bob Duff says, you know, will the compliance officer look at the Cantwell dive and the Goldson elbow? Of course not. As he says, and that's the thing as well, Gothenburg 83, if the same thing happens next week, VAR will not even look at it, never mind given a pen given. That's two of the instances where only it seems Rangers are given these types of penalties. We've reeled off two or three. Even go back to Hearts Motherwell, where Liam Boyce gets a boot in the chest, no penalty, the slightest of tugs. Now, you mentioned about Stefan Gartman being blocked off by Sam Lammers when the kind of run's taking place. What also frustrates me is the ball's going absolutely nowhere near Connor Goldson either. Yeah. But Richard Gordon and Sports Team were talking about how there was an SFA meeting on Thursday of last week with directors of footballs, club managers. Now, Barry Robson came out and said he couldn't attend that because he was working on the training pitch with the squad, so Stephen Gunn went. But Richard Gordon had heard from the media that they were talking about these sort of instances with shirt pulls, which were kind of going on unpunished. And what happens if a player is then blocked off? And it'd come out from this meeting that if the shirt pull starts before the block, which it did in this mm-hmm. instance, in my opinion, the first offence is the shirt pull. So that supersedes the block, which is obviously what Barry Robson was raging about, because he felt that you know, they both kind of equaled each other out and should have negated penalties if we're going to American football terms in this sort of section. But it just shows that the goalposts keep moving with VAR, and there's that uncertainty. And again, to kind of go back to what Sports Scene were saying, is that games shouldn't be getting re-refereed. I can't help but feel that incident was a re-refereeing, because Nick Walsh, who was in a perfect position, let's not forget, to see the shirt pull, let alone the block or anything that was happening, decided it was not a penalty. Now, that is maybe weak refereeing or spineless refereeing, as friend of the show Fraser Wallace called it, by Nick Walsh to rely on VAR to look at that. He should then have the backbone to say, well, no, not in my opinion, because I tend to agree with this opinion from Kaiser, that if the player's not getting the ball, it's not a penalty. Because Goldson being pulled back, I still don't think, even if he wasn't getting on the end of it, because it was a shite corner anyway. So, yeah, for me, it's frustrating.
I suppose it's a few of the things that come out of that. It's the fact that, one, if you're going to be so, you know, sort of scrupulous on shirt pulling, you're going to have so many penalties a game, because it happens every game, and especially with players that aren't getting anywhere near the ball. You know, players just jockey for position and pull each other's shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just give penalties all the time for shirt pulling unless it's denying them getting to the ball, in my opinion.
Yep.
You've then also got the fact of, like I've said before, VARs for clear and obvious errors. You can't just use it to cover your own back. We might as well just not have a referee on the pitch at that point and just have entirely video refereed games, because really, why are you paying two referees when you just need one? So, and then the third thing that comes out of it as well is just what is the point of even trying to defend a corner in the 90th minute like that? I don't get it. You know, and that's the thing that's kind of frustrating as well. I think we've had VAR for long enough now, you should know that it's there. Like, you should just try. And I mean, like I said, it's going to happen. You're going to pull shirts. But in a scenario like that, where you've got a fistful like that and you're yanking it, you know, so far behind him, it's going to get picked up on. But yeah, it's just painful that, you know, if it was at the other end of the pitch in the 94th minute and we were 1-0 down, we weren't going to get that. And everybody knows we're not going to get that. And Barry put it perfectly when he said, you know, it's not a good look that Rangers have got another penalty in the 90th minute.
And I think, you know, that's not an Aberdeen fan, you know, looking for a conspiracy by saying
every other fan, apart from two teams, would have the exact same opinion if they were in the same scenario.
Exactly, and thank you for taking the words out of my mouth on that sentence, because it's true. Every other fan of Scottish football, I had my Hearts mates, Hibs mates texting me going, "How the fuck is that a penalty yesterday?" I'd be spewing if that was given against us. And the Hearts fans, of course, had very similar at Ibrox when they got that penalty in the 90th minute. And what I did enjoy about Barry Robson's comments, you know, saying it's a bad look, you know, as you say, another Rangers penalty, and his comments in general about Rangers this, Rangers that, it's wound up all the right people, it stoked the fire ahead of the cup final, and as Bob Duff says, Clyde Super Scoreboard was a hoot as well, because the Rangers fans were really kind of reeling from those comments from Robson. But it's good because it's quite tactical. You know, we've spoken about managers going into games against Aberdeen. You know, even look at the witch hunt that I mentioned about Ruby kind of being highlighted. It was probably a surprise he never picked up a booking yesterday, given that kind of witch hunt against him. It's clever from Barry Robson because it's making the referees think, knowing that we've got to come up and play Rangers again in a month's time. So it's maybe putting that niggling bit of doubt going, okay, right, they're on to us.
But I think as well, it should also serve as, you know, a real sort of fire for the players. Because, I mean, really, you're not only trying to prove all the pundits that have already written you off. You know, you're trying to prove that you can beat one of the best teams in Scotland as well as beating the officials. You know, it's, you know, Robson should be saying to them every time they play them, which I'm sure he probably does, is you're not going to get anything. You're not going to get, you know, if it's a 50-50 call, it's going to go one way and that's their way. And that's the way that it's always going to go. And yeah, it's just annoying that it feels like as fans, whenever we play Celtic or Rangers, we're having these discussions.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be the case. I mean, the point of our coming in was to stop us having these discussions, but somehow neither of them seem to concede any of our penalties.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You get the same old stuff from Central Belt of, oh, well, who's shocked at the team that spends more time in the box, you know, gets more penalties? And it's like, yeah, but statistically and also evidently, you should be conceding penalties, but you're not.
Yeah. And as Lee Seymour says, he thinks he heard the radio pundit say that was the 10th domestic penalty that they've been awarded. We're not even out of November, which says a lot.
I think I'd seen a stat on Twitter that 11 of Tavernier's 13 goals against Aberdeen are pens, and we've been at Ibrox since 1996. I wasn't born until 1999. I've never seen a pen at Ibrox.
Well, I was just about to produce that stat there about Tavernier, obviously going on to score the penalty once it was awarded. That was his 13th goal against us, and 11 of those have been penalties. And let's not forget, he's also missed at least two penalties that I can think of against us as well. So just shows how many penalties we're getting awarded against us. And I just wonder how many of them are actually as contentious as we remember. And you also kind of go back to some of the decisions that we've not had against us, given to us when VAR was conveniently not working in that League Cup semi-final against Rangers, with Orion Kent's forearm last season, with Connor Goldson's handball, James Tavernier's handball. You think back a couple of seasons ago, and I can't remember if VAR was involved, and then the challenge from Alan McGregor on Lewis Ferguson, Ryan Hedges as well. There's loads of examples where we should have had much clearer cut penalties than what was given. And as I said, it's more the fact for me that the on-field referee doesn't believe that's a penalty, yet is told by someone else to make that a penalty, or slow it right down and get the still. And I think, Roy Thompson here putting the nail on the head. What bothers me is it is a penalty by letter of the law, but there would not be the same forensic microscope analysis if it happened at the other end of the pitch. It would be at least 10 pens a game. And that's the thing. It's putting that microscope and putting that forensic evidence into it and having to dig frame by frame, still by still, to judge that's a penalty, when if in real life Nick Walsh doesn't think it's a penalty, move on.
Yeah, and like I say, this is the issue. If we're just going to let VAR re-referee games, what's the point in giving the referee on the field his day rate? Because, you know, that the money could quite easily go into grassroots football or all these other things that the SFA is champions for.
And I think it was Billy Dodds that said, you know, just let's just kind of strip it back. Let's just put it down to goals and offsides. Let's have it just looking at that. No other incidents for the time being.
Yeah, no, that would honestly, it would make sense. Obviously, it'll be frustrating when you get the contentious decisions that you'd like it to check. But, mm-hmm. you know, at the same time, it would make it fairer. And hopefully the referees would actually do what they're paid to do and referee the game. As opposed to just going, oh, well, I'll wait until, you know, big boy upstairs tells me what way to throw it. And yeah, and I think that's another thing as well. Landed. Well, and that's the only thing as well, is the lack of, like you said earlier, the lack of backbone from referees. Every single time, I think, apart from one that I know of, where they've gone to the monitor, they award whatever's being awarded. You know, I've not seen one go over at the monitor. Apart from, I think I maybe seen one in a Premier League game.
There was the Liam Boyce one that when the Liam Boyce challenge. That was the one where the referee was called to the monitor and he decided that it wasn't a penalty. I think that's the only one I've seen this season.
And that's one thing that you would like to see more of, because not only does it, you know, somewhat maybe give you a little bit more confidence in the referees, in the sense that you go, okay, look, if they've got it wrong, at least they're backing their decision.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing what they think's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least you can then kind of go, okay, fair enough, that's human error, as opposed to just every time they go to the monitor going, oh, it's a pen. As soon as you did the little VAR symbol, it was like, okay, right,
yeah, you know,
especially because it's Rangers as well. You're going, all right, brilliant, penalty. Okay,
yeah,
here we go.
Yeah, I mean, he could have just gone point, you know, to the spot. There was no need for the 2.5 minutes dragging out for the suspense.
At least in rugby, when they occasionally go to TMO, you know, you've got them. They've got the. Not only can you hear the back and forth, you know, occasionally then they go, all right, okay, this is the decision I'm making. I'm saying it's a try, or I'm saying it's not a try, and this is why.
I guess though, the only thing about that in terms of hearing the audio, that's obviously as a TV viewer, but or if you buy them little microphones outside the ground. So I think, you know, in terms of football, we're not exactly going to hear the audio, but. I'd love to hear how they came to that decision in terms of the audio. Going, have they got any much minutes left, Nick? Let's just point to the spot, please.
But we'll just five just to one and a half penalty.
Yeah, just stand here and make it look like we're coming to a decent decision.
And I think like you say, the time as well is just frustrating, because it feels that, you know, 9 times out of 10 they're just delaying the inevitable.
Yeah,
but as well, I just. You know, if it's such a glaring error you've made, how is it taking 2.5 minutes to find it?
Exactly.
You know, and I think find it's the key word, is because they're trying to find it.
Yeah.
They're not highlighting it right off the bat.
Yeah. And as we said, it's about clear and obvious and re-refereeing. But like, we could sit here and speak about VAR till we're blue in the face, but we're not never going to come to something that makes it work to please everybody. At the end of the day, it's a point on the board, and it really should have been all three, but a point is giving us a platform to build on for the rest of the domestic fixtures, because there's certainly plenty to cover between now and the turn of the year, but also give us something to build on going to Helsinki. And we'll come to that game shortly, because yesterday as well, there was, of course, the Scottish Cup draw. Phil, Aberdeen's journey to Hampden will begin in the Scottish Cup fourth round with an away trip to Clyde. Or Hamilton, because of course they were evicted from Broadwood after the whole David Goodwillie fiasco, which means they are now playing their games this season in Hamilton. Happy enough with the draw?
Yeah, no, I mean, no complaints, really. Going to probably try and get along. It's a ground I've not been to, so, you know, I wasn't expecting anything much different to the sort of standard of Clyde.
Yeah.
It would maybe like to have seen us get Bucky, you know, just for the little Highland League journey. But I'm glad they got Celtic for a good payday for them. But yeah, hopefully the start of a second final at Hampden this season would be fun.
Yeah, it would be. And as Robbie Hanratty pointed out to me before we went live, and I'm taking this as what he's told me is the truth, is that the last time we played Clyde in the Scottish Cup, we've played them twice in both 1947 and 1970, we went on to win the Scottish Cup those years. So could it be that it comes
good
in three?
Good start, Glenn.
Well, it's that's on Robbie. So if that's false, then come at Robbie, not me. I'm taking that. It would have been nice to have it as a home tie, I guess, because you know Hamilton's not the best, or New Douglas Park's not the best away day, but it does mean a big build up of January away fixtures. So the way our fixtures are kind of running, haven't really been quite kind in terms of that, but it is a chance for Aberdeen to renew rivalries with Ian McCall, because of course he's been recently appointed as the Clyde manager, and I know he's trying to change the fortunes of a side that are struggling in League Two. So that's something to look forward to in the new year. Of course, it's Helsinki up on Thursday, and I think I saw earlier today that the temperature in Helsinki feels like minus 13, Phil. And I saw a picture on Twitter, I don't know if you saw it, where someone said, I don't know why tourists come to Helsinki in November, because it's so cold. Speaking of cold, there's been a lot of Dons matches that have taken place in the cold. So I posted on our Twitter account, or X to give its proper name, but who calls it that these days, at RTG underscore podcast if you don't follow us there. What is the coldest game you've been to following Aberdeen? Now, one game that stands out for me, Phil, was the Scottish Cup replay against Motherwell in 2012. It was so cold that the lower tier had ice still on it, so they closed it for safety ground. And we were housed in the upper tier with the Oompa Band, that brass band from that era that seemed to follow us around for a few games. That was particularly freezing. Stenhouse Muir, that replay, again in the Scottish Cup a few seasons back, was particularly cold as well. I know, still staying on the Scottish Cup, Arbroath gets mentioned quite a lot as well. Is there any games that stick out for you as being particularly freezing?
I suppose the one for me, and it's, you know, I guess not following the starting 11, is as a Cove loon that I am, I remember Cove Rangers when they were at Allen Park, got an Aberdeen 11 in, I assume what was the Aberdeenshire Cup, I was pretty young, I'm assuming it was still the same name at the time. And I think Aberdeen won it on penalties. But where Allen Park was is like right sort of near the coast in Cove. Mm-hmm. And when the wind used to come through it was horrific. It's kind of similar to what Balmoral is now. It's a horrific wind that can go through. And it was like a November evening kickoff. And yeah, I remember going home and standing in the shower for a very long time afterwards.
Yeah, and again, another Scottish Cup mention for from Gothenburg 83, Alloa away, and that was a very wet away day. I think that is the one game where every single item I wore that day, and I mean every single item, was soaked. And speaking of Gothenburg 83, Jeff Moran, I don't know if he's tuning into this episode, but he did mention, does being soaking wet in Gothenburg count as being freezing cold? And I think that's just showing off.
Yeah, exactly. It's a subtle flex, that one.
Yeah, that's how you name drop in style. In terms of European football, Lokomotiv Moscow at home, I don't know if you were at that game, Phil, that got a lot of mentions as well. For being particularly cold, so cold, sure, so that Moscow players were finding it difficult to warm up in.
I'm sure Ewan would probably mention Robin Yemi. I know you said it was pretty nippy when you went over there.
Though that was kind of more still in the summertime.
I think it was all right. I don't think it was too bad. I think it would have been worse if we were playing at the same time of year as now. But yeah, I don't envy anyone. Are you going over?
I am. Yeah, I am. Oh, I'm okay. Trying to fit my puffer jacket into my hand luggage because I can't be arsed wearing it on the plane. But I think I'm just going to have to.
Napper's got a fair few bunnets packed away, Glenn.
I've got two hats. I did go for a haircut last week and I was going to cut it again, but I thought, no, there's really no point in that because I'm going to need as much hair.
Extra layers, man.
Yeah, and final mention on the coldest game goes to Julie Strachan. She says, no contest, Aberdeen St Johnstone, January 1984. Game abandoned due to power cuts, lots of people stranded, buses stopped. She had to wait in a bus shelter, no, in a phone box for her dad to come and pick her up. That was that bad. So, I think it's going to be an experience for those of us traveling over to Finland. I noticed HJK were tweeting about the game. They said that winter's not coming; it's already here, and it feels like minus 13, but the sun's shining, so every cloud. On HJK themselves, though, Phil, they've not actually played a competitive fixture since the last time out when they got humbled 6-0 by Frankfurt. So possible bit of ring rustiness for the Finnish champions going into this game.
Yeah, no, you would think so. I mean, the home leg, I didn't think they were that great anyway. Obviously, I mean, they're a decent enough side in the sort of results they've strung together. But yeah, I mean, I suppose it all depends on the team we play as well. I mean, you know, with the sort of magnitude of games we've got coming up, I'm not going to be surprised if there's a lot of rotation. But I mean, there's at the end of the day, they've still got handy players. I'm pretty sure their big centre half boy scored for Finland during the international break. And then, like I say, the conditions are going to play a big part as well. You know.
Yeah, and obviously the conditions are going to suit them. I'm sure Richard Jensen's telling everybody how cold Finland's going to be. I think he was telling someone outside Pataudry, they told me that wear layers and wear more layers on top of that, because if you think you know cold, you don't know it until you get to Helsinki. But, you know, maybe a lot is being made of it. You mentioned about the games that we've got coming up and the squad rotation. I think back to the way the game ended for us on Sunday. Dante Polvara looked like he'd a bit of a knock, not just in the face from Connor Goldson's elbow, but his knee was giving him a bit of bother as well. And Bojan Miovski was asking to come off. I thought at one point it looked like he was beginning to hold his hamstring, but that didn't seem to bother him chasing lost causes. So I just wonder how much rotation we'll see. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't have qualms on starting Esther and maybe even resting Bojan for Duke. But my only kind of worry on this game, not really worry, I guess, is the importance of this game financially to the club, because it's a huge opportunity to get €500,000 and seal, of course, third place in our group, which would be a great achievement.
I think more of the rotation will probably come in Frankfurt, just with that being a game before the final. Mm-hmm. I would still think there would be some, because I'm assuming HJK is playing on a plastic pitch, is my assumption. Yes. Just with how bloody Baltic it is in Finland. So, you know, there is probably a few players there who are maybe running the risk of injury that you'd maybe not be playing, you know, maybe McGrath, just with the sort of trouble he's had in the past or injury.
Even the like Devil McGarry, as well. I suppose, as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few boys there that you're probably not wanting to risk on that type of pitch. But it'd be nice to see like Sokler getting a start again. Like I say, he's earned it really off of Sunday. He's played well. You know, maybe even getting Gay involved at some point for a bit of a longer cameo to kind of see what he can do. But no, I think it'll be a relatively, you know, I think the back three will probably stay the same. You might get McDonald coming in, but on that pitch with his sort of start to the season, I would also doubt it.
Yeah, and I think someone put in the comments when I mentioned Jack McKenzie earlier, it was a slight hamstring issue. So again, plastic pitch. I guess, you know, if we're speaking about McGarry and his issues, does that mean we see Ryan Duncan continue in there, or even Johnny Hayes coming in into the four? I guess, you know, we mentioned the plastic pitch. Barry Robson already brought that up when Brian McLaughlin was speaking to him after the game at the weekend, and he knows that that's going to have an effect on us, because seemingly that just seems to be a rock and ready excuse for us this season in plastic pitches. But one thing I hope does change for us, because we haven't mentioned this already, was that we've only had one corner in our last four games, which is an absolutely mind-blowing stat. So hopefully we see more in the attacking third and producing threats from corners, because I honestly can't get my head around that.
I've never actually noticed, to be honest.
And we didn't have any yesterday.
Well, yeah, of course, because most of their dead balls in the box were free kicks. Oh, well, that's a bit strange, actually.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think we do see probably more of a stronger lineup for this game. But if we can certainly maybe take the approach that Frankfurt had, we've not got the firepower that Frankfurt had by any means, but we've certainly hopefully got a bit more momentum on our side in certain match minutes. If we can catch Helsinki cold, pun absolutely intended, and get a few goals up in the game, we could look to rest players ahead of what is a big game coming up on Sunday at Easter Road against Hibs.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Like I say, if we can get a decent assailable lead, you know, and bring in some of those fringe boys that haven't really got the minutes. I mean, will we see Vinny make an appearance?
Mm.
Who knows? Would be a Christmas miracle. even like Ordadia, like, you know. And it's one of those things as well, I think, when you're looking at, like we've kind of just discussed, some of the injury troubles on a plastic pitch from our fullbacks. I mean, even Nicky Devlin, you know, has had his troubles in the past. Ordadia could be in for some minutes, maybe. Which I think everyone would kind of like to see something of him, at least.
I suppose in that sense, you know, the fact that we are out of Europe, you know, we have only got third place and pride to play for. But, you know, as we mentioned after the Pout game, we've still got €1 million on the line with 2 wins. How much do you think Barry probably cares about that fact that there's money riding on it? Or do you think he does have one eye on that domestic kind of situation? Because we do need to continue to build domestically with only having these 2 games left on the European stage.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think Barry's probably got the money at the back of his mind. I think just the role that he is as the manager, but I think just how he is as a person, a coach, I think his priority is going to be on potentially pride of finishing third, you know, picking up some more points. But as well, keeping his eye, because I think he's vocalised how he knows how important finishing third is for the club again. You know, picking up a cup would be ideal, you know. So I think that would more be driven by the likes of Corbach and Burrows, you know, the fact that money's online. I think Barry knows that if he wants money, Cormac can provide it. And as well, we've got the means to provide it with the quality of player we've got in our squad that, you know, could be tempted away in subsequent windows. So yeah. I think Barry be more looking at the sort of domestic side of things.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think also knowing that there is such a strong travelling support going across to Finland, they're not exactly going to turn up there and play the kids like we've maybe spoken about in terms of the Frankfurt game. We're still going to put out a squad capable of getting a result. We just need to hope that we do so. But I think, you know, we can't, despite them having that break in terms of HJK players, we can't give them any kind of disrespect or underestimate them, because of course they are champions in their own right, and they're going to be more than used to playing in what doesn't sound like the most fun conditions. So they're going to have that sort of advantage, and they showed at the game in Pataudry that they aren't no mugs. They are a decent team. I still feel we should have won the game at Pataudry, mind you, but they do have players in their ranks that can cause us problems.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, any team that's playing on a European level is no mug these days. You know, it's a lot of them are there on merit, and a lot of them have got, you know, very good squads. They've got very good sort of playing models and whatnot. But like I say, I think it'll be a good game. I think the conditions will somewhat level things out. Where I sort of saw us being the better football side at Pataudry, don't know if that was just due to the fact of playing on grass, and, you know, the fact that they'd had more games in their season, so they were maybe a bit leggy. Yeah. I think, you know, the game's pitched up to be quite good. And like I said, I'm hoping that you and the rest of the Dons fans that are going over have something to smile about by the end of it anyway.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to the trip. It looks like a lovely place to visit, and I'm sure there'll be that side of it as well. Unfortunately, with the travelling back on the Friday and Calm's going to be away this weekend, it's unlikely we'll have a full review of that game until next Monday. So there won't be a preview of the Hibs game coming up on the podcast, kind of in terms of reacting to the Hibs game. So we'll just discuss it kind of briefly, Phil, just rounding up this podcast. Looking ahead to that game at Easter Road at the weekend, how important is it that we finally get that Thursday-Sunday formula right and get in a decent performance? Because these are the types of games we need to be winning, ideally, if we're looking to finish third this season.
Yeah, no, it's massively important. I think we're just 3 points off Hibs now, are we? With
Yeah, I haven't looked at the table today, actually.
I think it's 3 points off with what I'm going to call the 2 points drop by Aberdeen, because that was another thing, going back to you, that winded me up after the Rangers game, was the banging on of their manager of 2 points dropped.
Yeah.
It was just not 2 points dropped by Rangers, it's 2 points dropped by us. But anyway, I think, if memory serves me correct, we're 3 points off Hibs with two in hand on them. So getting a win against them on Sunday would be ideal for pushing us up the table a little bit. And like I said, I think finishing third is massively important to the club this season. So starting to kick on and pick up those league points that they've kind of been a little bit sloppy with this year, would be nice to get that, especially, like you say, going into a difficult spell in January, you know, with majority of the month, I think all the month pretty much being away from home. And then obviously having Celtic Rangers back to back in February. I think getting some points in the run-up to that, starting from now, would be a good way to go. And as well as getting some form going into the cup final as well, you know, picking up that confidence and keeping sharp.
Yeah, because I think, you know, and, you know, I'm going to get this correct, because heaven forbid this pub chat style podcast gets anything factually incorrect. We're 5 points behind Hibs with two games.
Yeah, it would have been three if we'd won.
But 7 points behind Hearts with a game in hand. And of course, it's an Edinburgh double coming up for us in the league. So it's really kind of a crucial period for us in terms of targeting moving up the league. But also, I know we've got that game in hand, which does kind of have us sitting 4 points behind Killie and Dundee in sixth and seventh, respectively. But looking to just keep in touch with those teams, just hang on those coattails until we have to play those games in hand, so that, you know, tactically we can keep saying, well, if we win that, this is where we go. But I do think Sunday is an important gauge, as you say. I think spot on in terms of keeping that momentum and building confidence towards the 17th, which of course is going to be a huge game. We've got loads of games coming up, of course. I think actually I said it's an Edinburgh double coming up. We've got a game against Killie in between as well. So there's loads of games for us to be covering on this podcast. Callum better get his work schedule sorted out, or you'll be jumping into the co-host seat on a more permanent basis at this rate.
Give Callum the 99 shirt. Give the 99.
But like I said, a big game on Sunday, and Hibs obviously finding a bit of form, beating Dundee, albeit it seemed to be they were clinging on towards the end, but I'm sure they'll be looking to seek revenge from, of course, that semi-final defeat as well. So lots to look into in terms of that game. But what we'll be doing is looking back on that game, as well as the highlights from the game in Helsinki on Thursday, next Monday night. And in that episode, as well as looking back at those two games, we'll look ahead to, as Phil says, that Kilmarnock at home game in midweek at Pittodrie. So thank you very much, Phil, for joining me this Monday evening.
No, thank you very much for having me on, as always. You know, I'm always ready when Callum's just, you know, not feeling as well.
Yeah, like Christian Ramirez was in the MLS playoffs. Of course, it would be a miss to have you on the podcast and not mention the King of USA taking the Columbus Crew to the playoff finals. So well done to him, and congratulations to him on the birth of his son as well. If you're traveling to Finland and you've been listening to this episode and want something else to fill in the hours on the journey over, why not listen to our interview with Christian Ramirez as well to fill the gap, or go back to listen to any of the other former player interviews we've done with likes of Steve Tosh, who was tweeting us today, and who knew he had Twitter as well. There's a little fact finder for you. If you have been watching on YouTube, remember to leave a like and hit the subscribe button as well. Follow us on audio. And if you do follow us on any of your audio platforms, why not leave a review, leave a star rating as well. Anything helps for the algorithms on there, helps recommend these podcasts to more Aberdeen fans or fans that listen to football podcasts. So thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you again, Phil, for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.